Chapter 6. It wasn't a single blast. First, the ammo magazine went up. The whole thing, as though it had been rigged to blow. The flash was so bright, it washed out every visual feed within 2 miles. Then, within nanoseconds, the generator, buried a full 100 yards underground, suffered a catastrophic meltdown. It was fully armored, the fusion core capable of withstanding a direct strike from an orbital cannon without causing a rupture, but it went up all the same. The ground heaved, coughing tons of soil and shattered concrete into the air, as though the Earth itself had come alive and was taking its first deep breath, then disappeared into a cavernous hole. Then, just for good measure, all of the gate defenses detonated simultaneously, even as they collapsed into the newly formed crater, just in case the previous two cataclysmic explosions weren't enough to disable them. It was a fairly simple task to overload the individual power cores throughout the network system, if you were so trained. The QRF platoon didn't experience this. All they felt was a cacophonous hellstorm of light and sound. The shockwave flattened every mog, without exception. The nearest one skidded back along the road, carried along by it, shields flaring all over from debris impacts. Eddie rocked back, being forced to take several steps backwards to remain upright. Blake could feel a cold dread at the back of her mind. Had she trodden on a power suit? When visuals came back online, the base, the entire square mile of it, was gone. Wolfmother stepped away from the crater edge. The shields were gone. Already reduced, they never stood a chance against the ferocity of the forces that had been unleashed. The mighty machine turned, and Blake saw that the front armor was glowing, partially melted like a waxwork parody of itself held in front of a candle. The rapidly cooling plates were the grey of brushed steel, as though the paint had been sandblasted off, and the Warmech's tremendous weapons had been damaged beyond recognition. Blake couldn't allow the shock to set in again. Don't worry about what just happened. Concentrate on the now. She had a commander in front of her, one who could be critically wounded and must be saved. That was something tangible, something that could be achieved. All else could wait. "Charles!" she shouted fearfully. She then remembered to open a radio channel, took a breath, and spoke again. "Wolfmother. Eddie, Sensit Rep." Wolfmother's upper glacis burst open, the tortured composite armor plates opening like some vile, overripened fruit. It was a perfect shot, targeted to kill the heavy mech pilot, a difficult hit to make from behind. The shock hit then, and Blake stared open-mouthed, though her subconscious registered the telltale air distortion that trailed in the wake of the strike. "Railgun slug." "Sucks to be him," said a voice over the net, one who Blake didn't think she'd hear from, seeing as he should have just been atomized. "And you were doing so well," Specialist Armbruster told her, his voice free of emotion. "Armbruster? But how could he—" Blake's muddled thoughts aligned with a sudden pinpoint clarity. "He's taken the contract." "To hell with this." Eddie shook as the 155mm barrels thumped in sequence from the upper carapace, launching shells on a practically flat trajectory. She aimed in the general direction of the railgun shot, following the disturbed air back to its source. The range was short, and the high explosive shells impacted almost immediately, throwing up great clods of recently churned earth, still steaming from the terrible devastation endured by the sector base. Wolfmother's carcass teetered on legs no longer under instruction, and fell, backlit by terrific flashes and a storm of glittering shrapnel. The machine crashed to the ground, going unnoticed by the captain, so set was she on walking rounds into the smoking crater. The effect of her fire, up until recently so impressive, was like firecrackers in a tin pot in comparison to the sabotage Blake had witnessed. She could barely hear the impacts. "All call signs!" she screamed over the net. "Kill the traitor!" But she was the only one firing. The much smaller mongoose units were collecting themselves off the ground. Those that had come to rest on their backs were unable to stand unaided, and the squads were a mishmash of individuals pulling each other to their feet, the squad net alive with barely comprehensible chatter and cries for help.
What's happening, brother?"
Bader slurred, as Kinney and Braga each took an arm and hauled the mog to its feet.
"I've no idea," Kinney replied.
"The captain's screaming about traitors. I think the base just got hit by an orbital barrage. There was no incoming, man, Braga said with a grunt. The veteran trooper's suit was dented and chipped by numerous impacts and had seen better days. Nevertheless, he spun quickly to cover outwards arcs after he helped Bader up. The base just went boom, like the magazine went up. Kinney contemplated this, half listening to Sergeant Kronig demanding a sit-rep from the captain over the command net. She had got herself in a state of berserker rage, and Third Squad was scrambling out of her way as she slowly stomped in circle, pounding fire into the thick smoke. Kinney figured she must be tracking something on her scanners. Her gear was far more advanced than the Mog's, and she could probably see whatever hit the base. Come on, boss. Did you think I wouldn't relocate after my shot? Wait, was that Arm Brewster's voice? Nobody was responding to the squad net, so Kronig switched on his external speakers and growled over at Third Squad. Two of their number were dragging a third, and the fourth man was clumsily sprinting in their direction. Third Squad, on me! On me! Form up and provide perimeter defence. Second Squad, maintain forward protection of Eddie, but stay clear of her. The grizzled sergeant then switched back to the command net without waiting for a response. Eddie, this is First Squad. You need to stop moving so fast. You're at risk of hurting your own men. Even as he spoke, an armor-shod foot slammed down, cracking concrete mere feet away from the mongoose drivers. Kinney looked across at the struggling Third Squad members and decided to run over to help. The prone Mog seemed unable to stand up, and he thought he could lend a hand. He'd only taken two steps when the air distorted and two of the Mogs were gone. The one lying on the deck and one of his would-be rescuers obliterated. They'd simply vanished, leaving nothing but a smear of dark brown something for 20 yards to Reynolds' left. Kinney had no way of telling who had died, as the hypersonic crack followed the route of the railgun slug, which had gouged itself a crater in the ruined road half a mile back. The surviving Mog was stood, holding a severed gauntlet, still containing a flesh and blood arm which dribbled fluids from a ragged stump. The driver turned it dumbly in front of his forward optics. Kinney screamed at the Mog driver, who snapped out of his stupor and lumbered over. Kinney pointed out Kronig, bawling at troopers further down the road, and the pair returned to First Squad's position. They were now back to full strength after absorbing the remnants of Third Squad, not counting the critically injured Bader, who had been no good in a fight. They were a few hundred yards down the road, moving back towards the rail depot, staying clear of Eddie's unpredictable movement. The war machine kept lobbing shells around in a wide arc, but it had finally come to a standstill. The squad moved off of the street, into the relative cover of the edge of the train yard, hunkering down amongst an ancient scrap heap that had been piled 20 feet high against the site entrance. Kronig spoke over the squad net. I'll give her a minute to calm down, then try again. She's no use to us like this. Cover your arcs. Kinney grunted an affirmative and looked back. He could just make out Second Squad at the edge of the base crater. He counted 5 Mogs. It seemed that, by some miracle, Mirante's squad was still yet to take a casualty. Kinney thanked the saints for their protection, then shook his head once in exaggerated movement. He wasn't usually one to pander to the superstitions of the old ones. What just happened, Sarge? Kinney asked, trying to get to grips with recent events. The reply was devoid of the usual sense of self-assured confidence that radiated from the old NCO. When I know, I'll tell you. A loud beeping noise buzzed in Blake's ear. She snarled and squeezed her triggers hard enough to turn knuckles white. She could feel calluses forming on her palms from so much use of the lever controls over the last few hours, and she cursed herself for not wearing gloves. Blake felt herself breathing heavily and began to regulate it, forcing herself to settle, her chest heaving through the effort. She wiped spittle from her chin with the back of a hand and released the trigger with the other. A noise stopped, one that she only became aware of in its absence. Empty autoloaders whirring around, trying to extract non-existent rounds from ammo carousels that cycled regardless of supply. The beeping was irritating now, and she looked at her dazzling array of diagnostic displays. Primary weapon, ammo depleted. Arm Brewster had been using friendly radio channels to taunt her, meaning he could be easily triangulated, regardless of visual acuity. She had used this to fire using instruments, following a blip that had overlaid on her tactical screen. It was only now that she realized they were no empty taunts. The specialist hunter had been doing it deliberately. He had been talking and moving, drawing fire in order to drain the QRF platoon of its most potent firepower. She looked at the blip, now stationary and getting achingly close. The tall, skinny chassis of the Buckmaster class paused on the edge of the smoking crater. It was right in front of Second Squad, no more than 50 yards distant, hints of the curved upper carapace visible when the wind blew particularly strong. She knew she had to do something. If one of the squad simply looked up, they would surely notice the distinct lines of a scout mech, and it would be as good as signing their death warrant. The tips of railgun plates pointed at her menacingly. Blake's mind raced. How many slugs could she take before her hard shields failed? Would it be long enough for a kinetic laser to finish it off? One way to find out. She thrust her controls forward and charged, full power at the crater, finger playing over the trigger of her auxiliary weapon as she watched the range counter tick down. Armbruster did not fire. The outline of the hunter just quietly moved backwards, and she lost sight of him, invisible in the smoke once more. "Well, this was fun," he said, before her display scrambled momentarily and the blip representing him vanished. He's triggered his electronic warfare package. Scouts were equipped with tech that actively jammed sensor suites, making them all but immune to electronic detection. They were known as silent running kits, and in the absence of line of sight, practically turned the leg unit into a ghost.
"Get out of the way!"
Blake shouted, as Second Squad scrambled to either side of her advancing engine. She barreled into the smoke, rotating her turret left and right, scanning for targets. She played the beam of a kinetic laser about, hoping to register a hit, watching the smoke burn up as the bully beam superheated the air in a jagged line, but there was nothing there. There was no way she could catch up with Armbruster now. His machine was lightly armored and had superior speed. The captain released her trigger, and Eddie stood in the immense crater, 40 feet of walking doom, completely impotent. Nothing to do with all that strength. Blake cursed inwardly. Even in her worst nightmares, she could not have imagined a day like this. What in the seven hells would she do now? Everything was ruined. Practically all of her command was dead. Her leader was dead. Her friend was dead. Her prospects for promotion were dead. For all she knew, the entire New People's Army had been routed, and they were the only remnants. "Mom," Anna Morante said softly over the squad net. Fire still burnt all over the base, and occasionally some ammunition would cook off, sounding as though bands of people were hiding out of sight, stealthily making popcorn. As the smoke slowly cleared, being wafted away by prevailing winds, Blake could see the mangled remains of buildings and heavy vehicles. Her buildings and her heavy vehicles. Here and there she saw charred bits of meat, none of which could be identified as human. A lone heavy mech stood, Greer's by the look of it, in what was left of the garage complex. The entire building had been gutted, leaving naught but several crooked support pillars and a few crossbeams that led nowhere. The machine was slumped, blackened, and melted to the ground in a barely recognizable lump. But it still stood. "Mom," Morante repeated, this time her voice shot through with steel. All pretense of voice procedure was gone now, and Blake didn't care. What was the point if anybody could be the enemy? They would recognize call signs, no procedures. There was no such thing as operational security when your entire military could be the opposition. "Blake, what are your orders?" Edwina snapped out of her melancholy and looked around her. "Keep looking out," she said, her voice strained. "I've lost that bastard Armbruster. He's still out there." "Did he do this?" Anna could not keep the disbelief out of her voice. "I'd bet my life on it, Corporal. He sided with the corporation. He sold out his loyalties." Blake spat the last sentence. "Damn." The reduced squads of Mogs had reassembled themselves without instruction. There were 11 left in total. She'd lost another 2 soldiers without even noticing. Blake swallowed. "Who died?" she asked.
"Carter and Delgado," Kronig reported. "I folded Victoria and Machado into my squad, bringing us up to 6, though Bader is combat ineffective." Kronig left the line open before adding, "He'll die soon without medical attention." Bader drowsily retorted something in pure gibberish. "Roger that." Second squad, how are you doing?
We're good, boss. I think we just want to know what happens now.
Blake considered this as she fished her pilot gloves from a cargo pocket on her jumpsuit, thoughts churning in her mind as she worked individual fingers into well-worn leather. The captain wasn't entirely sure what to say. Kinney was exhausted. He couldn't even start to deal with the deaths of nearly everyone he'd known for the best part of a year. How had Armbruster done it? Why? He'd seemed like the least likely person to side with a revolution in Reynolds' eyes. The man was a fanatic. And now, the consequences of the contract were dawning on him. If all it took was one determined man to wipe out a sector unit, how much would it take to bring down the whole army? Were scenes like this being played out across the city? Had the entire military been neutered because of a single radio transmission? He wanted revolution, sure, but this was just senseless carnage. Armbruster had no need to create such an overwhelmingly destructive spectacle. He could have waited for their return and they could have discussed it like adults. Surely reason would have won over. Unit cohesion would have been maintained had they all decided to side with the Corvids. Then Kinney looked over at Kronig and realized that some would never accept the inevitable. It didn't matter, Reynolf decided, recalling the earlier encounter in the garage that now felt like a lifetime ago. Something had to be said.
We need to talk about the contract,
it blurted out before he could stop it. Kronig's machine rounded on him, and he was acutely aware of weapon barrels pointed in his direction.
I'm warning you, you little shit,
the sergeant rumbled. No, the captain interrupted, before he could say any more. He has a point. This needs to be cleared up before we proceed. Speak up, Private Kinney. Eyeing Kronig's large power suit warily, Kinney spoke again. Here goes. The leader is dead, and some would argue that the corporation has legal ownership of our world. Like the Corvids, he thought. Kinney was determined to give diplomacy its chance here. Nobody else had to add to the already appalling loss of life. Most of the civilian population is aligned with the Corvid ideal. They think it can't hurt to negotiate with a corporation, open up interstellar trade routes again, bring in people from off-world to advance our tech. We're stagnating here, living in the past, and I wonder why we can't just join forces with the Corvids and start something new. Kronig took a step towards the young private.
I've listened to enough of this. You think the corporation gives a shit about what your little separatist friends think? They want profit, and they'll bleed this world dry to get it. This,
spreading his arms in an encompassing gesture, servos whining in sympathy with the movement,
is what the old saints fought for in the first place. Anyone who stands against that is a traitor, and will die as one.
Kinney couldn't stand it. The old man would grind himself into dust before seeing reason. Weren't you a traitor? He asked simply. He could practically feel Kronig's glare through the black optical lenses of his not-a-mog.
That was different. Our last leader was weak. He wanted to give ownership back to the corporation. We fought him to stop this from happening.
You can't blame people for wanting something better.
Kinney was angry now. It was like banging his head against a wall. Kronig took another step forward.
You think Armbruster wants something better? There's people out there like him right now, using the contract as an excuse to wage their own private wars, and they'll be the ones in charge after the smoke clears. Do you think they'll be open to parleying with your beloved corporation?
Kinney didn't have an answer for that one. He just stared defiantly, a useless gesture since his squad sergeant couldn't see his face. If you two are finished, Captain Blake said, after a few moments of uncomfortable silence, I've received word from District Command that they are under attack. She paused to let that sink in. A combined force of separatists and renegade army units are within hours of breaching the walls, and they're recalling all loyal units to assist. Kinney agonized over this as he heard the words. He couldn't just let comrades die, even if he didn't agree with anything they were fighting for. Why won't they just surrender? Now, Blake continued, I frankly don't give a shit what you people believe, but you signed a contract and swore an oath. So I'm holding you to it. The torso of Eddie swung down, and the captain made sure that every individual Mog felt the scrutiny of the bully laser's targeting optics. I'm going to support my fellow soldiers. Are any of you coming with me?
I will fight to the death to protect our nation, said Kronig bluntly.
I'm a soldier. I'll do my job, said Anna, sounding quite weary about it. What about the rest of you? Blake asked. Do any of you wish to carry out the corporation contract? Please bear in mind that upon severing your service to the military, you will immediately be designated a threat. Kinney's heart leapt in his mouth for a moment. He contemplated it. He really did. Kinney nearly spoke out, despite an imminent violent death being the outcome. Eddie turned back towards the city and started to walk with that telltale thudding gait. Kinney watched as the Mogs fell into their squad formations and followed on. He saw Bader, half comatose and in terrible pain, blindly lope behind Kronig like a loyal dog, and let out a shout of pure exasperation. It echoed loudly inside the power suit, heard by nobody but him. Then Reynolf grit his teeth and began to walk. I thought so, said Edwina Blake,